Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLachlan. Jay McLachlan is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLachlan and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLachlan stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLachlan's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLachlan's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLachlan. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLachlan is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital Z Zibby 20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white open long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLachlan. Thanks so much. Welcome to Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books with Zibby. I'm the host, Zibby Owens. I am an author. My latest is Blank, pub date March 1st, a novel. I'm also a podcaster, obviously, a publisher, a bookstore owner, and so much more. If you love books, you're in the right place. In fact, we call it the Zibbyverse, or really, the LA Times called it the Zibbyverse, and we're going with it. Go to ZibbyOwens.com to learn more and follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens. Ute Blackstock is the author of Legacy, A Black Physician Reckons with Racism in Medicine. Dr. Ute Blackstock is a physician and thought leader on bias and racism in healthcare. She appears on air regularly as an MSNBC medical contributor and is the founder and CEO of Advancing Health Equity, as well as a former associate professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine and Legacies from Harvard Medical School. Dr. Blackstock currently lives in her hometown of Brooklyn, New York, with her two small children. Welcome, Ute. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss Legacy, A Black Physician Reckons with Racism in Medicine.
Thank you so much for having me on, Zibby.
I really loved your story and your personal story and your really like this love letter to your mom and the legacy that she left and your relationship with her and how she sort of informed the lives of you and your sister. And I don't know, it was such a wonderful sort of even framing device of a book to have your mom there. So maybe just tell listeners a little bit about the story and her. And I want to talk about your own health issue that you write about and just so much more.
Right. Yeah, I know. There's so much to talk about. But yes, no, actually, like when I thought about writing the book, it really was an opportunity to give my mom, well, she always had a voice, but to share that voice with others, like people who didn't know her or didn't have the fortune to interact with her. And, you know, she just had such a different upbringing than I did. She had a really challenging upbringing, single mom, born on public assistance, and, you know, they moved a lot, changed schools. It was really rough. But like, despite all of that, you know, she was the first person in her family to go to college. She went to Brooklyn College and then had a chemistry professor who saw like all the potential in her and was like, you need to apply to medical school. So she applied to medical school and got into all her med schools and ended up in Harvard Medical School. And like, you know, she obviously felt like a fish out of water there because there were, you know, kids whose, there's one kid whose parent had won the Nobel Prize for immunology, another relative of Jackie Onassis. But, you know, but she found her friends there and she made it through. But what was really, I think, most important is like she came back to the same community she grew up in to practice. So she took care of her friends and neighbors. And I think she was super, like, super purpose driven. Like the work was more than just work. It was really, you know, how do I show care or how do I work in service to my community? And so she made such a tremendous impact on my sister and me as a result.
Well, you talked about how there's almost like a new name for the type of medicine she practiced because she took into consideration really the whole person and all of the environmental factors and everything about them, not just like the one tiny complaint of the skin knee or whatever it might be.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like so much of like what we learn in medical school, it's about like, you know, the patient-physician relationship and just what happens between the two of us, as opposed to like when you're in, you know, the exam room or clinic room with your patient, you really are in the room with like all their family, their friends, their employer. Like, I mean, it literally, because all of that we know now, like now we know, like it impacts how healthy people are. And so I feel like my mom really got to know her patients on a very, very intimate level so that she could provide the best care possible to them. And yeah, so now that has like, it's called culturally responsive care and structurally competent care. But I feel like my mom was practicing that in the 80s and 90s before there were like these sexy terms for it.
Oh, and you paint such a picture of you and your sister like doing your homework there at the desks. And like, of course, then the two of you go on to Harvard Medical School yourselves and both become doctors in different neighborhoods, which is amazing. I mean, it's really like, I have twins. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like,
I know.
What's going to happen with them? Like,
well, I always joke that like we were my mother's little projects. Like, I think it's because of her upbringing, you know, I think because she grew up in poverty, like she wanted to give us so much and so expose us to everything. Like everything was a learning experience, like going to the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens, like looking at the different flowers, going to museums, introducing us to artists when we were, you know, artists that most people don't know of, about until they're adults. But when we were young, you know, taking us traveling. And so I feel like we were her little projects. And even on Saturdays, we literally, Saturday mornings would be full of activities, gymnastics, modern dance, you know, reading comprehension, because like she really had this drive, like, I want these girls to have a totally different life than I had. And not to say, and actually when we went off to college at 18, she's like, you know what, I'm really tired. She said, and she said this even before she got diagnosed, and maybe that is part of, you know, the leukemia, that's why she was tired. But she said, I'm really tired. I put so much into you girls, but we didn't do too shabby. But, you know, but actually, you know, the conversations I had with her when she was sick, she told me, you know, I asked her like, what are things I should know? You know, when I knew that she wasn't going to, you know, going to live much longer. And she's like, I want you, even when you have your kids, I want you to still take care of yourself. And that has always stayed with me.
I was so struck by that scene in the book too. And I'm like, wow, that is the parting advice, you know, like from a 47-year-old mom, and I'm 47 now. And I was like, and because at first, sometimes I read it, I'm like, oh, 47. Well, that was old. And then I'm like, yeah, but wait, I'm 47. Like, that's not old at all. It's so young. And I'm so young. Sorry. I'm so sorry that you lost her, and just sounded terrible. And the way it had, you know, how quick, the whole thing. I'm so sorry. I mean, obviously there's no,
thank you,
no good way, but that was the parting advice. Like, I'm not sure like what my parting advice would be to my kids. I don't think it would be that, but maybe it should be. Maybe it should be. Maybe I'm going to learn from
it. Yeah. No, I think it was that, like, she kind of, I think she maybe had some time just to look back and was like, you know, maybe I should have, like, she was so present for us, so present for her patients, so present for everyone in her life, that it's like, okay to like keep a little bit for yourself. Yeah. And I think that's kind of what she was trying to tell us. And, you know, interesting, like we were only 19. And at the time, I didn't feel like a little girl, because I was like a young woman. But in retrospect now at 46, I look back and I'm like, we were just babies. Like, we literally were just babies. And I even thought, like, once I had my own kids, that I would stop, like the pain of losing her would lessen. But actually, no. it got even more because I said, wow, my kids could have had this whole other, you know, grandparent here who would love on them and be sweet to them and also help support me as a parent, you know, just like, because you always need mothering. That's mm-hmm. the other thing. Like, it doesn't matter how old you are. Like, you always need mothering. You need someone who is going to, like, see you for who you are, who you can be vulnerable with, you know, and who, like, literally is looking out for you and only you.
It's true. I mean, what you say is just so poignant because it is the people that you lose. You lose the love they had for you that's in the world. Where does that go? Like, how do you get that feeling? When I lost my grandmother, I was like, she had that unique love for, you know, just that special thing. And, like, where did all those rays of... where do they go? Like, where do they, anyway?
Exactly.
It sounds silly.
No.
So you also wrote in detail about a time when you were misdiagnosed, which sounded horrific, and your appendix ended up getting infected, you know, bursting, getting infected. You were misdiagnosed. You know, the thesis of the book is that there is a lot of racism in medicine, and how do we reduce that and all of that. And, you know, part of every story told takes that view, but also, like, how could it not have been missed? And was it that? Was it not that? Anyway, so looking back on the whole thing, like, what do you make of it now?
Yeah, I think at the time I didn't really understand what was going on. I just knew that, like, it was really frustrating that no one kind of knew what was going on and that I was feeling sicker and sicker. And that, like, also I was being questioned about things, like, multiple times, like, my pain was being doubted. I was told, like, I was not in that much pain. And then, yeah. And then I kind of was just like, okay. And then my twin sister thought, she's like, I think you have appendicitis. And, you know, she was in med school with me, but we didn't feel, like, comfortable enough to, like, tell the doctors that, you know, something, even as medical students, we didn't feel comfortable. So, you know, it really was like looking back after the fact that I was like, could it have been because I was a young Black woman? Could not have been. But, like, we know there's a lot of data out there that shows, like, for women, for Black people, often in healthcare settings, people are not, you know, you're not listened to as much, or your pain is minimized. Like, there's a lot of gaslighting that happens. And so it kind of just made me later on as a practicing physician reflect on that experience. But actually at the time, what it did for me was it just made me more understanding of my patients. And one thing is, like, listening to my patients, because I wish those doctors had listened to me.
And when you talked about your experience in the pandemic, and you had that one scene where you're wearing all the PPE and everything, and you had a young Black girl as your patient, and she said to you, like, can I ask you something? Like, are you Black? And you're like, yes, I am. And she was like, and you could see her, like, relax, right?
Yes.
And tell me about that moment and just, like, the fact that there are so few Black doctors in the world, like, percentage-wise, and you give all the statistics and everything. It's really insane. It's really great.
I mean, like, in that moment, like, I was glad that I could be the doctor she needed. But at the same time, it made me feel sad because it made me realize that, like, she had these experiences before where mm-hmm. she didn't feel listened to. And so, like, the fact that she'd be like, oh, God, thank God, you mm-hmm. know? And so, like, ideally we want to have, like, health professionals and physicians that can take care of everybody, like, and give everyone the best care possible. Right. And we want everyone to feel, all patients to feel seen, heard, and appreciated when they go to see a doctor. Right. So one thing I talk about in the book is this, like, this report called the Flexner Report that came out in 1910, that was commissioned by the American Medical Association and Carnegie Foundation. And that actually led to the closure of 5 out of 7 of the historically Black medical schools. And there was a study that came out in 2020 that showed those schools would have trained between 25,000 and 35,000 Black physicians. So I think for me, a lot of the book is, like, using my story, my mother's story, bringing in history to, like, help kind of explain, like, how we got to where we are today in 2024, where we have, like, such a small percentage of Black physicians, where we have these racial health inequities that they didn't just come out of nowhere. Like, there are, you know, policy decisions and practices that actually have created this environment we're in now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it, and that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
So what now? What are our next steps? You say people finish reading the book, they're totally inspired for so many reasons. They're your cheerleader from now on. What now? What can we do?
Yeah. So like, you know, in the last chapter, I have a call to action because I knew that people would be like, okay, so what now? Just like to different groups. I think like for like physicians and like in medical school, like really to think about how we're teaching our students to care for patients and really to listen to them, you know, very, very well, to think about what's in the curriculum. And then also recognizing that, you know, being a great doctor is like continuing medical education. Like you're always going to be learning something new. That's what I actually love about being a doctor, but also addressing some of these issues as people go on in their career. And I think also the other thing is holding hospitals accountable, like making sure that they're tracking metrics to make sure that every patient is getting the best care possible. If they see any discrepancy in, for example, who's being prescribed pain medications, who's not, that they are keeping track of that and that they can intervene as needed. But another thing I talk about is sometimes the problem seems so big that there's a lot of things happening on a hyper-local and local level. So I talk about there's a birthing center in Minneapolis called the Roots Birthing Center that's owned by a Black midwife. And she created the birthing center specifically to care for Black birthing people, just to make sure that we're honoring their dignity and respect. And they've actually shown that they've had great health outcomes. And so there are things that we can invest in that we can, like, you know, maybe volunteer there or donate there or see what's happening in our own communities where we can help to advance health equity.
I love that. So your mom made you do all these activities as kids. What in all of that do you still do, or are you glad that you possess the skills for?
You know what? I have to think that all of those classes, like, you know, all of those practices made, so somehow created the person I am today, where like I'm super, super purpose-driven, like very passionate. I don't play the violin anymore. I definitely don't do gymnastics, but I think all of that was like, you know, kind of my mother's love showing up in different ways. And so I always say, like, when people meet me, they meet her. Even though she's no longer physically here, but like this, like my sister and I are like the manifestation of like the kind of mother she was, the love that she gave us, the experiences that she gave us.
Well, I'm so sorry that you don't have her. It's totally not fair. And I'm sure she would be so proud of you. Tell me about deciding to write this book and how long that took and what that was like.
I know. So it's interesting because people, so I had this whole experience, like where, when I was in academic medicine, I, you know, wasn't happy there. Just, I felt very silenced and muzzled. So I left to start my company and I was working part-time in urgent care. And then the pandemic happened in 2020. And I all of a sudden got this like increased platform. And my agent heard me on a local radio show. And she's like, I've been seeing your tweets. I've been hearing about you like as a health communicator. And she's like, you know, I read about you. I read about your mom. I read about the advocacy you do. And I think you should write a book. And I feel like there's a book out there and you're the only person to write this book. And she had so much, I know, it was like so amazing. And so we worked on the proposal together, but really I thought it would be a great opportunity, again, to share my mother's story, to share my experiences, but to use that storytelling as a way of talking about this really difficult topic, to sharing some of the history, social commentary. And so I worked for a year and a half on the book. I would say like it was, you know, it's exhausting. It's like, because it's a memoir, you know, part memoir, part advocacy, history, it was like, you know, emotionally, psychologically draining. I have to admit, like, right before it came out, I was like, oh my, feeling incredibly vulnerable. Also, mm-hmm. because I'm sharing my family's story. And I actually had my twin sister, like, she read all through it and gave me feedback and everything. I wanted to make sure that she also was pleased or satisfied with how we were presenting our family. But I feel like it's such an honor to be an author. Like, I feel like this is my gift to the world, like sharing about my experiences, my mom's, sharing this history, sharing how people can make a difference all in one book.
Amazing. Wow. A year and a half is not bad, by the way, to write a whole memoir.
That's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sometimes it's like 7 years, 8 years, 13 years. You never know.
Well, you know, I'm a mom, I'm a doctor, I'm a business owner. So I feel like I'm really efficient. I'm super efficient. Like if you give me a task to do, I'm going to do it.
next time I have something to do, I'm calling you, Uche.
I'm sure you're the same.
I know. I am pretty efficient, I have to say. But it's like, how do you get it? You just do it. You don't even have a choice. You just throw it in the mix and it gets done. It's like, right. We're like Cuisinarts, you know, like you just keep putting stuff in. It's going to work just as fast.
Yeah, exactly. But what I was going to share is that like, I really enjoyed recording the audiobook.
Ooh.
I didn't think I was going to enjoy it as much as I did, but it was really, really wonderful. I almost would tell people like, listen to the audiobook over reading the book, just because it's, you know, it's me talking about my experiences, and it made me fall in love with the book again.
Oh, that's so nice. Are you doing a big marketing outreach at hospitals and hospital gift shops and all of that?
Yeah. Like with a lot of large hospital and mm-hmm. health organizations. But actually, you know, I wrote the book for a broad audience. Like
I
feel like, yeah. But I still, yeah, definitely we're doing the health focus, but in hospital focus, but I would love for even people, you know, anyone to read the book. Because I think there's something in it for everyone.
I just meant from a marketing perspective. Of course, this is a book for everybody. Yeah. I was just thinking like, you know, to reach some of the other doctors and administrators, and just everybody should be aware of some of the things in there that they might not have known. And
I'm getting a lot of requests definitely to come and speak about the book to health related organizations. And I'm really happy about that.
That's great. So what is still on your wish list of life?
My bucket list?
Yeah. Like your bucket list, your wish list of life, or the things you want to achieve. Like you wrote the book, you did this, you did that. Now what else is out
there? Yeah. Oh, I would love to get to the point where I could have a philanthropy and actually help support some of these small community-based organizations that are doing such beautiful, wonderful work, but kind of like are unknown and unseen. Mm-hmm. So I would love to get to a point where I can actually help them thrive. That would be amazing.
Wow. And it's a good message for the world, even in the wish list. So there you go.
Yeah.
Amazing. Would you ever write another book?
Oh yeah, I definitely want to. I'm not sure what it would be. I was thinking maybe a children's book with my sister. Mm. Thinking like, you know, like for, you know, two twins that have a mom who's a doctor. So like a children's book, and then, you know, our mom is a big inspiration to us. So that's something. And then I'll see what happens, you know, after, you know, this book legacy is out for a while, and see what kind of feedback there is and see if there's room for another book. But right now I'm just enjoying having it out.
As you should. Well, congratulations. And thank you for sharing your story and your experiences. And there's really no better way to inspire change than to share from the most person to person, deeply personal, experiential. Like it's one thing to get facts and figures, but it's another to be like, listen, here's what happened to me. And let me tell you this. And let me tell you that.
Yeah.
has a lot of impact. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. All right, good luck.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.